Hello there. Today is Thursday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the president still hasn't said if he'll sign a bill to fund the U.S. government, but he's not happy about the bill.
We're going to look at the legislation when it comes, and I'll make a determination then.
A butterfly sanctuary is in the crosshairs of a part of the president's border wall about to be built. Climate change is now back on the agenda as Democrats put forward an ambitious plan. Also ahead, NASA declares the Mars rover is officially dead. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump said Wednesday that he has made no decision on whether to sign proposed bipartisan legislation for limited new barrier construction along the U.S.-Mexico border in order to avert another partial government shutdown Friday over the dispute. VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman has the latest.
Trump says he'll be looking for landmines in the bill from Congress, which he has yet to see. He indicated, however, he is pleased with preliminary figures in the border security deal worked out by a committee of Republicans and Democrats, but says the opposition party is being stingy when it comes to funding for the wall.
We're building a lot of wall right now with money that we already have.
Trump also tells reporters he does not want to see another partial shutdown of the U.S. government, saying that would be a terrible thing. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
Meanwhile, in the lower Rio Grande Valley of Texas near the border with Mexico, that does have money appropriated for part of the wall, it's home to the National Butterfly Center, which for 10 years in the making relies on ecotourism from American and international visitors. I caught up with the founder and president of the North American Butterfly Association, Jeffrey Glassberg, who says the sanctuary will likely not survive if this wall portion goes forward. He tells me they've filed a restraining order this week in an effort to stop border wall construction until the courts hear their case on a lawsuit filed last year, even as bulldozers are just outside the property and have begun flattening brush and vegetation.
Construction started last Wednesday. Clearing brush in preparation for the hardscape, they started that on land adjacent to us.
Are they planning on plowing through the sanctuary?
We have every indication of that. They've come and talked to us about it. We've talked to them numerous times. Our land is on the border, and it runs to the river, to the Rio Grande. And people should understand, the wall is not at the border. The wall will be from 1/2 to 3 miles from the border as it winds all along South Texas. Huge amounts of land are being ceded, essentially, to Mexico and being made a no-man's land. So the President of the United States will succeed in making America smaller again, literally.
How much of the sanctuary will be impacted?
2/3 of it, 70 acres. The entire thing will be impacted because there's a very good chance that as we go further out into the future, we will have to close because the Butterfly Center, these are wild butterflies. This isn't a zoo, and it's the largest botanical garden in the United States and perhaps in the world that focuses on using native plants in a formal garden setting. It relies on the support of ecotourists who visit from throughout the United States and actually from throughout the world. And without that, we couldn't survive. And our very, very strong expectation is that this wall, during its construction and after its construction, will lead to significant diminution of visitorship. Ecotourism provides more than $500 million into the economy of the lower Rio Grande Valley, which is the most economically disadvantaged region of the United States. So we help that. We have 6,000 school kids more that come through each year, most of them federal poverty level.
What about the butterflies?
Well, once the Butterfly Center is gone, then all the butterflies there will also be gone. A huge percentage of people have this concept that if you have this beautiful meadow and someone builds a housing development on it and calls it the Meadows and destroys the entire meadow, that somehow the butterflies just move somewhere else. No, you've decreased the world's population of butterflies. For example, we have 240 kinds of butterflies that we've found at the Butterfly Center. And most kinds of butterflies, their caterpillars will only eat one kind of plant or a small number of related kinds of plants. So, for example, monarchs, their caterpillars will only feed on various species of milkweeds. And if there aren't milkweeds, seeds, there won't be any monarchs. For these 240 kinds of butterflies that are down there, each one eats a different thing. And so there's a butterfly called a Mexican blue wing. Its caterpillars only eat Vassy's Adelia, which is only found in the United States in Lower Rio Grande Valley. So we planted lots of this native plant, a beautiful little shrub called Vassy's Adelia. And sure enough, the butterflies found it. And now we have this very thriving population of Mexican blue wing. But if you destroy the habitat, if you remove the Vassy's Adelia, there will be no more butterflies.
Can you describe what it's like to be there in this sanctuary?
Throughout the year, there are butterflies there. But especially if you come late October, early November, on a good day, you could see as many as 200,000 butterflies at the Butterfly Center. I mean, literally clouds that obscure your vision through the air.
Why are butterflies such unique creatures?
People just have this connection with butterflies. The ancient Greeks, they thought that butterflies, that the human souls departed as butterflies. And the word for human soul and butterfly was the same word in ancient Greek. It was psyche. Mm. And the Aztecs thought butterflies were directly related to human beings. And so people have this connection to butterflies. And that's important because what we're trying to do is use butterflies as something akin to a gateway drug to conservation.
They're beautiful to look at. And I would imagine that some of the reasons why they have such symbolism is because of the whole process of them coming to be butterflies.
That's right. Everybody's fascinated by this process called metamorphosis, where a caterpillar changes and becomes an adult butterfly. It's an incredible process. It's the beauty, it's the gracefulness of butterflies, and it's this magical transformation. But don't get fooled, because butterflies are really more than just a pretty face. They actually are very important parts of ecosystems, and for many, many kinds of plants, butterflies are the most important pollinators. In addition, the caterpillars of butterflies and moths are the most important food for all the songbirds of North America. And we just had bee people from the American Museum of Natural History there doing surveys. They think it's probably the most diverse area in the United States for wild bees, and they found numbers of species never before seen in the United States. It's all going to be destroyed. Not in the name of national security. If the United States were really threatened in any way, I'd be the first person to say, okay, this is a disaster, but it's threatening the United States, we'll have to do it. There is no threat. There is no national security concern. People are just being lied to and faked out. So to destroy everything for no reason, it's insane. And people around the country have no idea what's happening. For example, even on our property, three times in the last 6 years, some immigrant family groups have been detained. We had cameras from all the networks up there the other day. We're sitting on the levee, pan out over the thing. You can see everything. There's nobody coming. There is no crisis.
All right. Well, we wish you the best. That's Jeffrey Glassberg, founder of the National Butterfly Center and president of the North American Butterfly Association. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. The House has backed ending U.S. support for Saudis in the Yemen war. Pakistan will host the next round of U.S.-Taliban peace talks. Are Russian torturers in Africa? And fewer people are feeling the Valentine love. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The U.S. Justice Department announced Wednesday that a former U.S. Air Force counterintelligence officer who defected to Iran nearly 6 years ago has been charged with revealing classified military information to the Iranian government and helping Iran target her former co-workers. 39-year-old Monica Witt allegedly disclosed the existence of a highly classified military intelligence collection program and the identity of a U.S. intelligence officer to Iranian spy agencies. A grand jury indictment unsealed on Wednesday also charges Witt with helping Iranian intelligence services target at least 8 U.S. agents who interacted or worked with her. An arrest warrant has been issued for Witt, who remains at large and is believed to be in Iran. Joining us now is George Mason University Professor of Governmental Affairs, Robert Deitz. So how serious are these charges?
It's serious. Bear in mind, they've been aware of this for 6 years. So I assume that they've done a fair amount of checking what kind of information she knew and have tried to block her from getting any more information. But of course it's serious. It's also ironic that she would skedaddle to Iran.
Right. It is unusual that someone would defect to Iran. What do you think would make someone want? That seemed very unusual to me when I heard that. It seems like most people want to leave there.
Yep. I don't know. I mean, you know, one could hypothesize that she became a true believer, but the other possibility is that she knew that U.S. police were onto her and decided to get while the going was good.
I know there has been an arrest warrant issued for Monica Witt. She's 39 years old. Apparently, she allegedly disclosed the existence of highly classified military intelligence. If they were to be able to arrest her, which I would think would be unlikely if she's in Iran.
Right.
What kind of punishment would that garner?
Oh, I mean, life in prison, for sure. Bear in mind, though, that when you've got a top secret classification, that there are limits to how much you actually know. She was in the Air Force, so certainly she was privy to top secret documents involving the Air Force. I would doubt whether she had a whole lot of information that came from the CIA, for example, or NSA, just because she'd have no need for that.
Well, the Assistant Attorney General for National Security at the Justice Department said that the case really underscores the dangers to our intelligence professionals and the lengths that our adversaries will go to identify them and target them.
Yes, that's true. Our enemies certainly target people, and they do so with a fair amount of knowledge of our system. I mean, for example, they will know that a CIA person in a foreign country may well be identified as a political officer, and so they'll look very closely at political officers and seeing if through background they can find out more about him or her. And I suspect the same is true in the Air Force, that our enemies are aware of how we structure our intel and that they would want to target people that they think are likely members of intel.
From the reports, this woman conducted online research and created target packages that allow the Iranian government to identify, track, and neutralize U.S. counterintelligence agents. Obviously, though, the intelligence community here was able to be led on to that.
Right.
So would you say that these types of things always become apparent and get uncovered? Or is it becoming more difficult now with so many malicious cyber actors, including Iran?
The fact is that there are usually signs that leaks are taking place, and inevitably counterintelligence people begin looking. Where might this information have come from?
That's George Mason University Professor of Governmental Affairs, Robert Deitz. Thank you for your insights. Political and economic instability have pushed the Venezuelan people to the edge of ruin, requiring a surge of humanitarian aid, Trump administration officials told U.S. Congress on Wednesday. In his first Capitol Hill appearance as U.S. representative, special representative to Venezuela, Elliot Abrams told lawmakers all options for addressing the crisis are on the table, though some Democratic lawmakers warned against any military intervention. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Capitol Hill.
3 million refugees have fled a Venezuela on the verge of chaos as President Nicolas Maduro refuses to leave power and uses the military to block U.S. food and supply shipments desperately needed by those left behind.
We do hope that through the diplomatic efforts we're making and the internal efforts by the interim President Guaido and his team will change that scenario shortly.
Juan Guaido, the head of the National Assembly, has been recognized by the U.S. and 50 other countries as Venezuela's interim president. This after Maduro was inaugurated in January for a second term, triggering renewed protests because he is widely viewed as having rigged last year's presidential election. President Trump was among the first to pledge support for the interim government.
We stand with the Venezuelan people in their noble quest for freedom, and we condemn the brutality of the Maduro regime, whose socialist policies have turned that nation from being the wealthiest in South America into a state of abject poverty and despair.
But fleeing Venezuelans could be hurt by the administration's policies, Democratic lawmakers warned Wednesday.
This has become Latin America's biggest migration crisis in recent history, and I fear the United States may make things worse. But our admission numbers are at their lowest in recent history. Worse, the immigration policies of the White House have resulted in more Venezuelans being deported back to Venezuela, and that's like sending people back into a burning building.
Venezuelans who can prove their asylum cases are welcome, Abrams said, adding that U.S. economic sanctions against Maduro are working.
We have exponentially increased the cost of doing business for the regime in the gold sector, the financial sector, now in the oil sector, the combination of which has created enormous pressure on Maduro and his band of thieves.
Abrams faced Democrats' criticism for the Trump administration's refusal to rule out U.S. military intervention in Venezuela.
I think it plays right into the hands of the dictator that's our adversary right now. And I think it really undercuts the ability and our involvement with the Venezuelan people themselves.
Despite his reluctance to rule out the military option, Abrams said the solution does not lie with the United States.
It's not for us to choose the next president of Venezuela. It's for Venezuelans. We can help, as a lot of other countries can help, in facilitating a free election.
A solution, with Maduro still maintaining control over much of the country, that does not appear to be imminent. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Well, the climate is not only changing globally, it is changing in Washington. With Democrats in control of the House of Representatives, climate change is now on the agenda again. Some Democrats are proposing what they call the Green New Deal. VOA's Steve Barragona tells us it's an ambitious and controversial program to transform the nation's energy supply.
Just weeks after taking over the House of Representatives, Democrats are talking big about tackling climate change.
Climate change and our environmental challenges are one of the biggest existential threats to our way of life. And in order for us to combat that threat, we must be as ambitious and innovative in our solution as possible.
Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Ed Markey have launched what they call the Green New Deal.
When we talk about a Green New Deal, we are talking about jobs and justice. We are talking about the greatest blue-collar job creation program in a generation.
The program aims to overhaul the entire energy system in 10 years with a massive expansion of renewable energy sources, efficiency programs, and zero-emission vehicles. It would reduce emissions from agriculture and grow carbon-absorbing forests. But the proposal does not say how.
While the resolution does not mention any specific technology, it talks about any technology that can dramatically reduce greenhouse gases. So
the proposal also does not specify how to pay for the programs. It has almost no chance of becoming law under President Donald Trump, who routinely dismisses the threat of climate change on Twitter. Trump called the proposal a massive government takeover.
They want to take away your car, reduce the value of your home, and put millions of Americans out of work. You have to spend $100 trillion. And remember this, no other country except us is going to do it.
The Republican Senate is unlikely to pass it either. John Barrasso represents Wyoming.
This Green New Deal, I mean, which to me would be a raw deal for American families as the cost of energy skyrocket under their leftist plan.
Critics also attack the proposal's broad social objectives, which include health care, job security, housing, and education for all. But Democratic presidential candidates are embracing it, including Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, and Kirsten Gillibrand.
If you are unwilling to take on these powerful interests, you can never do the things you aspire to. You can't address global climate change. You can't address health care as a right, not a privilege. You will never get better public schools.
But even within the Democratic Party, some call it unrealistic. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called it the Green Dream. But Ocasio-Cortez doesn't mind.
No, I think it is a green dream. And I think that it is. All great American programs, everything from the Great Society to the New Deal, started with a vision for our future.
That vision will remain in the future as Democrats look to the 2020 elections. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
Meanwhile, scientists are warning that human activity could bring about the largest extinction event on Earth for millions of years. A new report says 40% of insect species could disappear within a few decades, leading to a catastrophic collapse of nature's ecosystems. Kevin Enix reports.
A growing number of the Earth's insect population now exists only in collections like these.
Nobody's seen those for 100 years.
A new review of over 70 studies of insect populations suggests that human pressures are causing insect populations to plummet by as much as a quarter every decade.
Some of my colleagues have compared it to playing Jenga. You know, you remove pieces from the Jenga tower and everything seems to be okay. And then you remove one piece and the whole thing falls down. And you don't know which piece in advance that's going to be. And once you've removed it, you can't put it back again. So the loss of species is inevitably concerning because often we don't know what those species are doing. We don't know what other species are depending on them.
Insects make up the largest class of animals on Earth and represent more than half of all known living organisms. They are incredibly diverse and in many ways make life on Earth possible. Bees and butterflies pollinate our food, flowers, and trees. They feed all kinds of larger animals, including humans, and insects play a vital role in the decomposition of all kinds of organic matter, from leaves to roadkill. Their collapse is being driven by human activity, everything from traffic to industrial farming and pesticides to light pollution. Scientists say doing nothing to solve the problem is not an option.
And a large number of the crops we eat and rely on are pollinated by insects. So imagine a world where that pollination process is not taking place. And there are some cases already around the world where we are having to pollinate by hand at huge cost, at huge economic cost, simply because the insects aren't there to do the work that we would normally ask them to do for free. And in some cases, if you're talking about food crops, just try and imagine the scale of what that would look like if insects weren't doing that for us.
One big caveat, all of the studies come from industrialized countries in Europe and North America. The researchers say they simply don't have the data to census the robust insect species in more tropical regions. But in these industrialized countries, the report predicts that all insect species could be gone in a century. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
VOA's International Edition continues. When Sarah Dwyer left a lucrative job in banking to spend a year in France, she had no idea it would give her an opportunity to fulfill a childhood passion. Almost 10 years later, the American entrepreneur has never been happier. As VOA's Julie Thabot tells us, Dwyer is spreading the joy to her customers and workers alike with chocolate.
And this is what we use to make our famous chocolate-covered caramels.
Sarah Dwyer has always loved chocolate, especially caramels.
When I was little, I used to like to squish them all in the box to find the chocolate-covered caramels. So I started a company that only makes chocolate-covered caramels.
That company is Chouquette, where almost 10 years in, Dwyer and her team are still making small batches of handcrafted caramels for a growing clientele. The idea for realizing her childhood passion came in 2009 during a year-long visit to France, where she decided to enroll at the Cordon Bleu Culinary School in Paris.
Once I started making everything in the pastry area, from a croissant to a chouquette, I loved it. And what I realized was that no one was making chocolate-covered caramels the way I loved them in the United States.
Dwyer uses quality chocolate from a California supplier, natural cane sugar, vanilla beans from Madagascar, and butter and sea salt from France.
All of those ingredients go in to making the best chocolates.
Her caramels come in 16 different flavors, each with their own design, and can be customized. She sells them online and in about 200 stores throughout the U.S. One of her most popular lines reflects iconic images of Washington, where she's based.
We took the five monuments that I love best in D.C. and made chocolates with those designs on top.
Another popular product is a series inspired by powerful American women called Phenomenal Women.
Everyone loves Oprah, so we said inspire by Oprah. We say win like Serena. We say go high like Michelle. Rule like Ruth.
Ruth, as in U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
The Rule Like Ruth set outsold every single holiday design.
But perhaps the sweetest and most satisfying part of her business is her staff, about half of whom have a range of neurological issues.
They're the best employees I've ever had. It is absolutely not a charity. It is the best business decision I ever made.
I think it's a great experience. Everyone here is very open, very nice.
It makes me feel good. I don't have to dread coming to work like I might somewhere else. It took me a few different jobs to land here. And I don't know, I just really like it here.
Dwyer's clients range from upscale hotels and major airlines to county fairs and local food markets. But no matter who she's making her signature chocolates for, Dwyer says she can't imagine doing anything else.
We're chocolate, we're caramel, and we're designs, but when you put them all together, it makes something magic.
Julie Tabo, VOA News, Gaithersburg, Maryland.
NASA says it's official. A Mars rover last heard from 8 months ago is dead. AP correspondent Warren Levinson reports.
The announcement at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory that the Mars rover Opportunity is dead had something of the air of a funeral.
We said our final commands, and we heard nothing, and so it comes time to say goodbye.
But like any funeral, it celebrated the life of the deceased. Project manager John Callis says Opportunity, expected to last 3 months, sent back a treasure trove of information in its 15-year life.
We've done phenomenal things. We've greatly expanded our understanding of the red planet.
NASA says the probe fell victim to a dust storm of historic proportions, covering its solar panels so they couldn't collect the power it needed to keep going. I'm Warren Levinson.
And finally today, we take you back a few decades to this day in history. February 14th, 1982, the J. Giles Band single Centerfold shot up to number one in the U.S. The song also landed on the music video game Rock Band 3 and in 2018 was ranked at number 66 on Billboard's all-time top songs. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today, but find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, John Ellison. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
This is VOA News. I'm